controls the past, controls the future. Who controls the present, controls the past.
The death of bin Laden marks the most significant achievement to date in our nation's effort to defeat al-Qaeda.
All you got to do is start looking around, start thinking for yourself, start investigating things, and you will see it all right there. So you have the power. Humanity has the power. We have the power. Do you want to fight? You better believe you got one!
Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories.
As for me, give me liberty or give me death!
The answer to 1984 is 1776.
Welcome to the InfoWars Nightly News. It's Wednesday, May 29th, 2013, and here are our top stories.
Tonight, on the InfoWars Nightly News, our dollar is on life support as foreign exchanges gain new ground in the stake for a global world order reserve currency. Plus, all new U.S. weapon systems compromised as the Chinese have acquired a back door into the Pentagon's top secret blueprints. All that and more on the InfoWars Nightly News.
Well, for decades, the mainstream media told us they didn't exist, that the Bilderberg was just a conspiracy. Well, it was a conspiracy, all right, but it wasn't any theory. It was a fact. As a matter of fact, and just recently, we saw leaked documents going back to 1955, just the second year of the Bilderberg Group's meetings, that had them planning the EU as well as the Euro. Well, they're going to be meeting again in less than a week, and we're going to be there. Alex Jones is going to be covering it live for InfoWars. And as part of that coverage, knowing that we were going to be coming, because it's now an open secret, everybody is talking about it at this point, the police in the local area there in the UK contacted Alex and wanted to talk to him about that. We have an article about that on InfoWars from Paul Joseph Watson. The article is, Police Wary of Provocateurs at Bilderberg 2013. The Hertfordshire police are wary of potentially violent provocateurs that could hijack peaceful protests at the site of the 2013 Bilderberg Group meeting in Watford, UK. In a conversation with Hertfordshire Police Liaison Officer Steve Lee, Alex Jones was told that authorities will be vigilant in ensuring that any such provocateurs were shut down immediately and will not allow them to ruin the event for law-abiding demonstrators. Now, this is important. Lee said that his goal was to facilitate the right to free press and the right to demonstrate, which is why the public will be allowed within 5 feet of the road so they can get pictures of the arriving Bilderberg Group participants. And he also joked that he was looking forward to meeting Alex Jones and hoped that Jones's efforts to have CNN host Piers Morgan sent back to Britain remained unsuccessful. He's not the first Brit to say that. I think people in England know Piers Morgan much better than people in the United States. And after that long history, very few of them would like to see Piers Morgan return. Now, we're going to have a special dedicated page that's going to be covering Bilderberg, a special site, and it's going to have live reports, interviews, articles, as well as your Twitter conversations, and all that is going to be in one central location. So stay tuned. We're going to be rolling that out later this week. Now, a past Bilderberg attendee has been in the news quite a bit. He's also an indicted war criminal. Yes, I'm talking about Henry Kissinger. It was just today that Alex talked to Luke Radowski about a conversation that he had, and you can see that on our website, you can see it on the internet, with Henry Kissinger. Amazingly, Henry Kissinger was being given a Peace Prize award by none other than former General Petraeus. Now, Henry Kissinger is an indicted war criminal, and just to kind of give you an idea of what I mean by that, he was actually indicted by a Spanish judge named Garzon in Spain. And this is what he was indicted for. He was responsible for nerve gas being shipped into Vietnam in violation of treaties where that is illegal. And that nerve gas was used to gas an entire Vietnamese village of old men, women, and children. The purpose of gassing that village was to get two American deserters. And so those kind of war crimes, as well as the bombing of Cambodia, those are the things that outside of opening up a path to China and being impeached. Those are the things that we remember about Richard Nixon and Henry Kissinger. But what Luke confronted him on was the quote that just recently surfaced just within the last month from WikiLeaks, a quote from Henry Kissinger where he said, "The illegal we do immediately, the unconstitutional takes a little longer." Now, he also had this to say.
We are now facing a common challenge. And the challenge is how to build a world order for the first time in history on a global basis.
Yeah, building a world order for the first time in history on a global basis. And a key part of that speech was made at the Asia Society. And we have an article about that on Infowars.com by Kurt Nimmo. And he says, Rockefeller protege and operative Henry Kissinger calls for the United States and the authoritarian government of China to work together to create a globalist totalitarian government. The challenge is, Kissinger told the Asia Society last week, how to build a world order for the first time in history on a global basis. But the fact is, there's never been a world community before. And then he suggested that China and the U.S. collaborate on such an effort. Now, Kurt Nimmo also points out in that article that he has a quote from David Rockefeller. He says, whatever the price of the Chinese Revolution, and that was an indirect reference to the millions that were killed, it has obviously succeeded not only in producing more efficient and dedicated administration, but also in fostering high morale and a community of purpose. The social experiment in China under Chairman Mao's leadership is one of the most important and successful in human history. That's a quote from David Rockefeller in the New York Times in August of 1973. That's right. Chairman Mao exceeded at making the trains run on time, just like Adolf Hitler. And it was the authoritarian government in China that Henry Kissinger and the globalists decided they would use to transfer our wealth and our production to. And that's what we've seen happening ever since Henry Kissinger opened up to China. Well, it's not just moving industry and production out of America. It's also moving military technology to China. As part of that, there's a breaking story today that Russia Today covered, although the story was originally broken by the Washington Post. Here's how Russia Today covered it. Their headline, Pentagon says the Chinese stole our newest weapons. The designs for more than two dozen major weapon systems used by the United States military have fallen into the hands of the Chinese, U.S. Department of Defense officials say. Blueprints for the Pentagon's most advanced weaponry, including the Black Hawk helicopter and the brand new littoral combat ship used by the Navy, have all been compromised, said the Defense Science Board. Now, this was leaked to the Washington Post, and we have to ask, why are they telling us about so many weapon systems? Even the newest and most expensive jet fighter of the Pentagon supposedly has had the plans stolen. Well, I think the key to this is that if you look as to why they're talking about this right now is look at the Washington Post report. The Washington Post has a very different headline. Their headline says, confidential report lists U.S. weapon system designs compromised by Chinese cyber spies. See, the Washington Post's emphasis is not so much on the weapon systems that were lost, but on how they were lost. The quote says, the significance and the extent of the targets helped explain why the Obama administration has escalated its warnings to the Chinese government to stop what Washington sees as a rampant cyber theft. So the Washington Post article chooses to focus on the cybersecurity aspects of it, the cyber spying, the cyber theft. Although we've had many weapon systems, major weapon systems, lost to the Chinese under the Bush administration, the Clinton administration, now they want to push this narrative of cybersecurity. Why? Because they want to get something like CISPA through. Now, the person who fought CISPA so hard and so successfully, Aaron Schwartz, who died earlier this year, pointed out that it wasn't really cybersecurity that they were after. They were shutting down people like Kim.com and threatening to shut down and seize websites like perhaps maybe in the future InfoWars. That is not going to do anything to promote cybersecurity. As a matter of fact, our own government is the one that is doing the most to promote cyber spying. Most of the spying, most of the vulnerabilities are funded by the Pentagon and by the U.S. government. And it's not just the Chinese who are trying to spy. It's the U.S. government who now wants to create an entire army of citizen spies.
Since 2010, Walmart has spearheaded a See Something, Say Something campaign by broadcasting 1984-esque messages from Homeland Security head Janet Napolitano that encourages Walmart shoppers to spy on each other.
Hi, I'm Janet Napolitano, Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security. Homeland Security begins with hometown security.
That's why I'm pleased that Walmart is helping to make our communities more safe and secure. If you see something suspicious in the parking lot or in the store, say something immediately.
So it should be no surprise that police visited a father of three this weekend after he went to Walmart with his children to cash a check. Walmart security alerted authorities to a possible kidnapping of three young girls, all because the security guard thought it was strange that the girls weren't the same race as their white father. Police who were at his home when he arrived made the oldest child confirm that the man with them was their father. But this is not new. In 2009, a couple lost custody of their children when Walmart photo center employees alerted police to pictures they thought were akin to child porn. The photos were of the couple's children taking baths and being wrapped in towels. That couple is now in the midst of a lawsuit with Walmart. Back in 2010, when Big Sis became the head of the Walmartian Snoop Society, Alex Jones had plenty to say about the DHS's invasion into our lives under the threat of a terrorist attack.
Well, it's here. 1984 in America. This is the straw that breaks the camel's back. There is no doubt that we're in deep trouble as a society. The head of Homeland Security, Big Sis, Janet Napolitano, has now come out and announced that over 800 Walmarts in the next month are going to install telescreens at the checkout scanner with different federal orders to spy on the other people shopping.
But don't worry. As we reported in 2011, if you're one of the many good citizens that are reporting suspicious activity, Homeland Security wants to shield you from facing the consequences of misidentifying innocent behavior as extremism or terrorism. Of course, this will only encourage an army of ill-equipped citizen spies to report any behavior whatsoever, no matter how benign. See something, say something. Unless, of course, you're blowing the whistle on government corruption, and then, you know, mom's the word. I'm Leanne McAdoo, and this has been an InfoWars Nightly News Alert.
Now, yesterday we talked to a World Bank whistleblower, Karen Hughes, and she was concerned not only about corruption at the World Bank, but about the reaction of the U.S. government and how that undermined our credibility and the ability of the U.S. dollar to continue as a reserve currency. And remember that just a couple of months ago, there was a very good article called "Is the Dollar Dying? Why U.S. Currency is in Danger." This is an older article from CNBC. Basically, that article said the U.S. dollar is shrinking as a percentage of the world's currency supply, raising concerns that the greenback is about to see its long run as the world's premier denomination come to an end. Generally speaking, it is not believed by the vast majority that the American dollar will be overthrown, said Dick Bove, vice president of equity research at Rafferty Capital Markets. He said, but it will be. It will be overthrown. And this defrocking may occur in as short a period as 5 to 10 years. And he also has this warning. If the dollar loses its status as the world's most reliable currency, the United States will lose the right to print money to pay its debt. It will be forced to pay this debt. That is going to be a severe consequence for us. And yet, as Karen Hughes pointed out yesterday in her whistleblowing interview, the kind of corruption that they're covering up. She exposed corruption at the World Bank, and as a result, she was fired. Many countries wanted to know what was going on, but agency after agency with the federal government basically blocked any inquiries and covered this up. And this all goes back to countries that are getting concerned about the full faith and credit of the fiat currency that we basically created here by central banks. And as she pointed out, it's privately owned central banks who are organizing and changing us into debt slaves through incurring sovereign debt. We see this happening in a story that's just breaking today out of Japan. InfoWars, via the economic collapse, is reporting the Japanese financial system is beginning to spin wildly out of control. The financial system of the third largest economy on the planet is starting to come apart at the seams, and the ripple effects are going to be felt all over the globe. The Japanese economy has been in a slump for over a decade. Japan has a debt-to-GDP ratio of well over 200%, and they're spending about 50% of all tax revenue on debt service. In a desperate attempt to revitalize the economy and reduce the debt burden, the Bank of Japan decided a few months ago to start pumping massive amounts of money into the economy. Now, what's happened is, the reason this is a story is, at the end of last week, on Thursday, the Nikkei Index plunged 7.3%, and it was the largest single day decline in more than 2 years. And then on Monday, it fell another 3.2%, and since then, it's basically flatlined at about that level. So a lot of people are very concerned about this. You know, Keynesian economics of printing money and creating debt and saying that debt that we owe to ourselves really doesn't matter, I mean, that is obviously to everybody one of the biggest lies that was ever told. That is the essence of Keynesian economics. It doesn't, Keynesian economics is unable to explain the past. They never had a good explanation for the Great Depression, and they're unable to control the future as they claim to. But what it does do is it provides a rationale for the private central banks to enslave all the world into a mountain of debt that they have created. Well, in a different story, the Pentagon's latest weapon in the Colombian war, drug war, is a soap opera, as reported by Wired magazine. They say the U.S. government, the U.S. Army, is introducing a new weapon in its fight to get Colombia's guerrillas to put down their guns, and that is the soap opera. That's a gist of a recent Army request for proposal which describes the building blocks of an anti-guerrilla propaganda campaign in Colombia. According to the request, the Army wants a potential contractor to write and produce a total of 20 radio novella episodes for an Army MISO team, that's MISO, that's Military Information Support Operations, that's based in Colombia, with 8 episodes that convey messages to promote demobilization or encouraging armed groups to put down their weapons. Another 8 will convey messages that counter recruitment of target audiences into illegal armed groups. Now, the importance of this is not so much the war on drugs or what's happening in Colombia, but to look at the technique that's being done and look at the fact that this is now out in the open. For quite some time, the U.S. government has been using predictive programming, has been controlling people very subtly through the media. There's very obvious propaganda, like, for example, the mainstream media saying that the Bilderberg Group doesn't exist. But there's also very subtle propaganda that goes on, and that's typically been behind the scenes. Now we're seeing the Army come out just like they did with, just like the Department of Homeland Security did with their massive ammunition purchases. We're seeing requests for proposals for basically propaganda. Now, this is what they're doing there, but they've done this in Afghanistan and Iraq. As the article reports, the military's MISO teams spent $54 million this year, and they have spent $580 million over years of fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan. This is basically, the U.S. government is one of the largest propaganda organizations that's ever existed. And anybody doesn't believe that they're using movies and entertainment to control us, and not just the news, but entertainment, needs to take a look at this article from Wired magazine. It breaks it down quite a bit as to what they're doing in the war on drugs, where they're openly talking about how they're going to change people's hearts and minds. Now, coming up after the break, we've got an interview with Elizabeth Rich. And she was the lead attorney in the landmark Vernon Hershberger case that just was decided earlier this week. Vernon Hershberger is a raw milk farmer, and this case has important legal precedents for everybody in the area of food freedom.
As we saw in Katrina, and as we are watching now in New York and New Jersey, the federal government can't and won't help you in a crisis. FEMA ran out of water and MREs in days. Electricity is still off to over 1 million people. The Red Cross, who is quick to beg for money, is now slow to react. Don't put it off any longer. Get prepared today. The InfoWars Shop is the largest distributor of ProPure water filter systems. And now, get 15% off your ProPure order with the promo code WATER15. While you're on InfoWarsShop.com, check out these other great preparedness items. The Aquapod Kit lets you store up to 65 gallons of water in your bathtub. Pocket Socket provides you with manual electricity for small electronics like your cell phone. The Life Straw is great for your bug-out bag. And check out our complete line of Interfood products for great-tasting and nutritionally dense foods that have a great shelf life. If you are looking to secure your home in a crisis, you can order Strategic Relocations the film, a great companion to the book Strategic Relocations 3rd Edition and The Secure Home by Joel Skousen. When the time to perform arrives, the time to prepare has already passed. Get prepared now, so if a crisis strikes your home, you and your family will be secure. Go to InfoWarsShop.com and don't forget the promo code WATER15.
I'm Darren McBreen, and these are some of the new items that are available now at InfoWarsShop.com.
Alert the public to Obama's blatant abuse of power with the new Obama t-shirt. Obama's Joker face on the front and come and take it on the back. It's time to publicly call him out for what he is, a tyrant. Defend the Second Amendment with our top seller come and take it t-shirts. And look at that, women's cut tank tops and t-shirts now available. Nice hat. Plus, the Don't Tread on Me flag. And now you can become a micro distributor of the InfoWars magazine. Plus, get your own copy delivered right to your door each and every month. And if you're tired like I am of you and your family being exposed to polluted drinking water, get the Pro One High Performance Water Filter. It gets rid of all pathogenic bacteria, cysts, fluoride, heavy metals, and numerous other contaminants.
So join the revolution at InfoWarsShop.com.
Well, you may have heard about the landmark trial of Vernon Hershberger. This happened in Wisconsin, and Vernon Hershberger is a raw milk dairy farmer. We've got on the phone Elizabeth Rich, and she's with an organization, Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund. Isn't it strange that in America we have to have a fund set up to defend people who are trying to go from a farm to a consumer? But that's the world we live in, and we're grateful that they're there to help make that happen. And so we've got on the phone Elizabeth Rich, who is both a lawyer and a farmer, and she is vice president of the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund. Elizabeth, thank you for joining us.
Well, you're welcome. It's great to be here.
And congratulations on the victory. It's a victory not only for you and for Vernon, but it's really a victory for all of us, everyone who likes to get fresh, wholesome food and likes to be able to make decisions about what they eat rather than having somebody else make that decision for them. I'd like to talk to you about this, particularly about Vernon Hershberger. What was it that he was doing that was so odious to the government that they would try to hit him with several felony charges?
They were misdemeanor charges, but it was the first time that a raw milk farmer has been prosecuted criminally in the state of Wisconsin. Our laws are set up so that there are both civil and criminal penalties available to the government for the same violation. So they could have pursued this civilly and had a much easier case to prove.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, they pursued it criminally for the first time. And I believe that.
And you say they were not felonies, they were misdemeanors, because I thought that there were like four felonies and they acquitted him on three but got him on one. But
they were all misdemeanors. Four charges, four misdemeanor charges, but they did carry penalties of more than a year of incarceration. So it was a serious charge.
That's great. So that's great that you beat that now. So the precedent was that they were coming after him with criminal charges for the first time. So tell us what they charged him with and how this all began.
He was charged with operating a retail food establishment without a license, selling and distributing milk without a milk producer license, operating a dairy plant, which is where yogurt, butter, cheese, that kind of thing is made, without a license, and violating a hold order that was placed on food during a raid conducted in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And you asked what was so odious about this. The case was all about raw milk, but the way the government characterized it was this is a very simple, uncomplicated case. It's a licensure violation. And during the trial, the prosecution brought up several times that for $260, Vernon could have gotten a retail food establishment license. But, of course, he couldn't have gotten a license for what he was doing. There was no license for what he was doing.
Right. That's kind of like telling somebody that they can sell marijuana if they get a license for it.
That's a good analogy.
Well, actually, it was another attorney that made the analogy, said this is essentially like prohibition, except it's not about alcohol. It's about raw milk, something as innocuous as raw milk.
That's right, and we've scratched our heads over this a lot. Why is it for instance, that guns are involved? Why do we show up at this farm and other farms with armed law enforcement officers?
Yeah, tell us a little bit about that. Tell us exactly what happened at the raid, because I think people would want to know that. I'm sure it was quite an ordeal for Vernon and anybody that happened to be there at the time.
It was an ordeal for Vernon, his wife, and their 10 children, some of whom are very young. Mm. It's very confusing to have deputies show up and order your father around and treat him like a criminal, which is what happened. The first raid was in August of 2009, and at that time, two inspectors showed up along with several representatives of the health department, and they went through the facility, noticed all of the products and inventoried them, and came back, so they knew what was there. There were no surprises. Then in 2010, a year later, the big raid came, and that was with the guns and the law enforcement officers. I think there might have been 11, I want to say 11 people, counting the inspectors and law enforcement at the farm.
Did they show up was it like a SWAT team raid? Was it like a no-knock thing, or just a lot of people showing up?
It was like a SWAT team thing. Yeah. Cars descending, no notice, mm-hmm. and what they did, it's just the whole approach is so heavy-handed. There's a video that we showed during the trial of the inspector ruining 2,000 pounds of milk, just dumping dye into it to denature it. And at the end of the bulk tank is Vernon's oldest son, who's in charge of the milking. These are the fruits of his labor personally, and one of the younger boys. And the looks on their faces are just so striking. They're watching the destruction of God's gift to their family and their members.
That's just criminal.
It was pointless, for sure.
Yeah.
And just kind of mean-spirited, and that's how the whole thing felt to us, and I think to the jury.
And, you know, you're talking about how they repeated over and over again that it was a $280 license fee. Why do they have to show up with a SWAT team? Why do they have to destroy so much property if that's the case?
Well, that's right. And if it is, as they said, just all about a simple license, then why all this commotion and good heavens, taxpayer expense? There were four government lawyers at every hearing, and there must have been 9 hearings. Just a tremendous expenditure of resources.
So when was this raid? When did this happen?
The raid was June 2nd, 2010.
Okay, so this has been going on for 3 years. What's his status been for the last 3 years? Did they shut his business down?
Well, I have to speak carefully on that.
Okay.
If he had stayed in business, it would have constituted bail jumping, which would be more charges.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So
it was an ordeal because this drug out for 3 years. It completely disrupted his life and his family's life for 3 years. And as you mentioned, they've got multiple state attorneys showing up and everything, working on this for 3 years.
That's right. When they turned over, as they have to in a criminal case, all of their investigative findings and documents, and there were 6,000 documents plus 22 CDs of more documents and videos and other findings. They hired a computer forensic specialist after they took his computer in the raid and analyzed it. Hired this computer forensic expert to analyze it. He said he worked on it for years. The analysis. I can't imagine what that must have cost.
It's just amazing. We see this over and over again. And, you know, when it comes to the war on drugs, I'm not a drug user, and I don't care. But I don't want to see the loss of freedom that we see of people, the loss of choice, and the massive amount of money that is spent on the war on drugs. And for so many years, we've seen that used as a vanguard to take away our privacy, to take away so many of our freedoms. And now they're moving into other areas like raw milk. It's just amazing to see this happening to a raw milk farmer, what we've seen happening and decried happening to people who are marijuana users, because they changed from the drug pushers under Reagan, they changed from the drug pushers to the end users. And now we're seeing this happening with raw milk. It's amazing.
It is.
Well, tell us some of the arguments that the prosecution brought up at the trial. I know they made a pretty amazing statement about his income. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, what the prosecution was trying to do was portray Vernon as a greedy, money-grubbing, person who's who was motivated by money in his law-breaking lifestyle. That, I think, was the goal.
Character assassination.
And we expected that going in, and we knew it was going to backfire because Vernon Hirschberger is the most humble, generous person I've ever met. So what they did was they took his, they had, in the raid, they had confiscated all of his receipts and invoices, and they were putting those up, and he had monthly records of his totals that were run through the cash register, and he had made a notation. He had taken off the sales tax. He paid sales tax, which the state also thought was a big indication that he was running a huge operation, but his sales tax was between $1 and $450.
Yeah, it's pretty small operation.
Because in Wisconsin, we don't pay tax on food except for certain junk foods and prepackaged foods. But for milk, yogurt, butter, we don't pay tax. So he was paying sales tax on soap, handmade soap, and products like that. Mm-hmm. But he was subtracting the amount of sales tax paid, and then he wrote net monthly income. And they were trying to say that that was his net income. So it was in the $20,000 range. So they were saying, look at all this money he's making. Well, any farmer knows that you spend a huge amount of money to run your farming operation, to purchase hay and equipment, and everything is so expensive. So,
well, any business, that's true of any business. There's a huge amount of difference between the gross take and the net income. I mean, you know, Alex has talked about that. You know, we might take in, I think the figure he had was $7 million, but it's all gone. And if you're an individual businessman like Alex, a lot of times you go without even taking a salary for a while to keep the organization going. So there's a huge difference between, and people don't really understand all of the hidden costs and expenses unless you're the person actually doing the books, actually running the business.
Well, in Vernon's case, he, you know, when we asked him, gee, Vernon, don't you understand the difference between gross and net? And he did a little bit, but not a lot. And he said, when we asked him on the stand, why did you write net when it meant gross? He said, well, I guess that's my eighth grade education. And he just, you know, he was doing the best he could, but right. He's not very sophisticated in financial matters. So the state, it was misleading the jury to say that his income was $20,000 a month. In fact, he makes, his income tax returns show that he makes between $40,000 and $50,000 a year, and that's for a family of 12, which the federal poverty guidelines indicate $95,000 is the poverty line for a family of 12.
Wow, and they prosecuted. That's amazing. And they prosecuted a farmer like that with 10 kids for 3 years. They harassed him just because he was selling raw milk. Well, let me ask you about what you offered as a defense and how you think the jury saw this. Because clearly he hadn't paid the $280 fee, but he was also couldn't get a license to sell that because they wouldn't give him a license to sell raw milk. So do you see this as a kind of a jury nullification of a bad law going against raw milk producers? How do you see this this verdict?
I think that in this case it was not a nullification verdict, although there were certainly some grassroots efforts to educate county residents about their power to nullify. Mm-hmm. I think that in this case what the defense's theory was that, and this was supported by testimony from every regulator we put on the stand, is that in Wisconsin, dairy farmers can consume their own products without the need for any licenses whatsoever. So Vernon had attempted to comply. He knew this, and he had with his own documents attempted to set up a structure so that all of his members were in fact owners of his farm, mm-hmm. and therefore did not need a license to consume the products. That was his intent, and the documents, we presented the documents with redactions. There was a lot of evidence we were not able to bring in. There were constant skirmishes, and most of the rulings went the state's way on what we could not introduce. We couldn't speak the words raw milk. I don't know if you heard about that.
Oh, I didn't know that. No, tell us about that.
We were not allowed, the judge continually said, this case is not about raw milk, and that's what the state said, it's not about raw milk. Of course it was about raw milk.
Yeah.
But we weren't allowed to speak the words. So
that's amazing. That's amazing.
So,
well, I've heard stranger stories. I mean, we had a guy who defended himself in New Jersey because he was going to do it on the jury nullification straight up. And it's actually in the state constitution in New Jersey that jurors have not only the right, but the responsibility to judge the law as well as the facts of the case. And he had a gag order put on him from one of the judges, but he still got it out, and he still was acquitted the first time, 7-5. Actually, it was a hung jury. They came after him a second time, and the second time the judge let him actually hold up the New Jersey law and show the New Jersey law to the jurors, and when he did that, he got a unanimous acquittal. So,
wow.
It's amazing the things that judges will and won't let into the courts, but you're a lawyer. You know that better than we do. So let me ask you then, since this wasn't necessarily I wouldn't characterize it as a jury nullification because they did find him guilty on one charge, which I would imagine if they didn't agree with the law at all, they would have let him go on that one as well. What do you think the precedent is that this sets, or does it set a precedent?
It's Wisconsin only, and so any legal precedent would affect Wisconsin law, not the laws of other states.
Mm-hmm.
It's also a criminal case, so the precedential effect might be somewhat more curtailed because the state had to prove this beyond a reasonable doubt. So the fact that they failed to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt doesn't necessarily mean that the law is as the defense presented its theory, if you can follow that. But I think, for me, the message is the important thing here, the message to regulators in Wisconsin and in other states, because Mr. Hershberger's supporters came to Little Baraboo, Wisconsin, from both coasts and dozens of states in between, and they came to support him when he was taking a stand for food freedom. That, to me, is the significance, and for the people's right to opt out of the industrialized food supply and for the people's right to decide what they are going to consume.
Yes. There was a lot of grassroots support. We had an InfoWars listener who basically set up interviews that Leanne McAdoo used in her report. He interviewed Liz Reitzig with Milk Freedom, Raw Milk Freedom. Anyway, he interviewed Michael Badnarik and another lawyer who had been in a very large case in California. And I know there were a lot of people there supporting him, just as you said. So I think that was a pretty important message.
Right. I think we really want to focus regulatory attention on this issue. In my opinion, I feel that if the Founding Fathers had thought for a moment that government would try to take our right to consume the food of our choice and the medicine of our choice,
mm-hmm.
that would have been the First Amendment. That would absolutely have been the First Amendment, that we have a fundamental right to consume the food of our choice.
And I'm sure they didn't even think about it because it's something that wouldn't even have occurred to you and I a couple of decades ago, that the government
That's
would
right.
be that overreaching, that overbearing to do something like that.
Yeah, I think it's a clear case of too much government, and I hear it again and again from people who aren't normally politically very interested, but this is an issue that interests them. And so that, to me, is the important precedent here. I really hope that, because we've seen this heavy-handed enforcement all across the country, not just in Wisconsin. I'd like to see the government pick up the message that I think is being sent, which is stay away from our food supply.
That's right. When you start talking about
food supply,
we start telling people what they can eat and drink, you start even getting the attention of couch potatoes because they sit on the couch and they eat stuff. So when you start dictating that to them, you get even their attention, even people who aren't typically paying attention. Tell us a little bit about the bigger fight that you've got with your organization. Tell us a little bit about your organization and other issues besides raw milk that you're involved in.
The Farm to Consumer Legal Foundation was set up in 2007, and the ultimate goal was to level the playing field a bit. The government has unlimited legal resources, essentially, and farmers typically are on a pretty tight budget, and they don't have extra money to spend on lawyers.
Absolutely.
So for the purchase of a $150 membership, our farmers can apply. Not automatic, but they can apply for representation, and we try to take as many as we can.
Mm-hmm.
And the goal is just to help any farmer who is being pursued by the government unfairly. So we have zoning cases. We had we have a hotline set up that farmers can call in.
Mm-hmm.
I got a call on the hotline last month from someone in Colorado whose wife had a breastfed baby, exclusively breastfed baby, and she had been charged with grazing in the municipal right-of-way, with because her cows got out.
Oh,
her cows got out. And her cows got out, and the sheriff told her to round them up, and she did round them up and put them away. But they came and arrested her and put her in handcuffs and took her to jail and told her husband she couldn't come back until she saw a judge in the morning. And here he's got this crying baby.
Oh, man.
So I called the sheriff's office and laid into them for doing that, and they wound up letting her go. But that's the kind of, you know, we get these calls. We had another call. Some people were, farmers were hosting a farm-to-table dinner, and the regulators showed up and started dumping bleach on the food.
Oh, man.
And one of my colleagues, Gary Cox, told her to ask them if they had a warrant, and if they didn't, tell them to leave. And they did, and they were able to save some of the food and keep the event going.
Wow. That's just
amazing.
But
these are the kinds of things.
Well,
yeah,
that's
we're seeing
great.
This all across the country.
That's a great organization, and like you said, it's nationwide. It reminds me of what homeschoolers had to do with the Homeschool Legal Defense Association. They had to group band together and for their common defense in court. And so it's great that you're doing that for farmers. I really appreciate that. It's wonderful that you've got a background as both a farmer and as a lawyer, and that you're stepping up to do that for people. I really appreciate that. Thank you so much for doing that, and hopefully other states are going to see this, and it'll publicize it for both consumers and for the government regulatory agencies that wish to take that choice away from consumers.
Yes, I hope so, too.
Well, thank you very much, Elizabeth, for talking to us, and keep up the good work.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Thank you. And we'd also like to thank Bregan Fuller, who went to the trial and recorded interviews with Liz Reitzig, Michael Badnarik, and other people there. Thank you so much for caring and for being an activist. And if you want to get involved with people, you can always go to Planet InfoWars, where you can find other activists and like-minded people there. And don't forget to go to Prison Planet TV. Your subscription helps us to fund this operation, and up to 10 people can view it simultaneously with you. So you can have actually 11 people watching the news simultaneously. It really helps to fund our operation, and it helps to get the information out there. Well, that's it for tonight, but don't forget that we're going to be having live coverage from Bilderberg next week. We're going to have a Bilderberg site coming online in the next day or so that's going to consolidate all of our coverage and information about Bilderberg. So stay tuned. We'll be back tomorrow night at 7 Central, 8 p.m. Eastern.